From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being there, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have so much going on today. Brett Baer standing by. Rich Lowry, bottom of the hour. We are following what's happened with these California wildfires in Southern California. Pacific Palisades, a little bit north from that, Malibu. They told Santa Monica, you guys got to get out of there. That's where our bureau is in Los Angeles. It's where a lot of our people live in Los Angeles. Now there's talk of it spreading. There's be separate wildfires. The Pasadena area is another. Another one starting up in Riverside. We've never seen anything quite like this. We've been covering it all morning, and it is 0% contained. I mean, it started last night. During special report, we heard some of it. I saw a lot of it during Hannity. And then you realize that you get up in the morning and it's spread. It's gotten worse. And the winds are making things just untenable. They said that there's a call out now for 50 firefighter strike groups. I don't know if any have arrived. We've been covering it on Fox and Friends, so we'll get to that, too. But first, let's cue what else is going on in the world with the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We want to get back those hostages for Israel and for us. You know, we do have people that are hostages being held. If this deal's not done by the time I get to office, all hell is going to break out.
Wow, can he do it? President-elect Trump wants hostages out of Gaza by Inauguration Day. Meanwhile, Iran might have a nuclear weapon by then, according to French President Macron. What he could do in the next 13 days to free them and stop them.
Number two.
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms.
Mark Zuckerberg.
We're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X.
So here we go again. X got fixed. Now Facebook is next, if you believe it. I do. Facebook didn't like what they saw in the mirror and proclaimed they have changed their ways and still stop. Can they stop being biased? They said they will. We review their moves and ponder their sincerity. Google, you're next.
Number one.
There's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. There's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. I do think it's a responsible conversation. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana Purchase?
Yeah, and he went on to say Seward's folly. That was Alaska. Meanwhile, Trump agenda on full display as he rocks Mar-a-Lago, talks about Panama, talks about Greenland, and he talks about much more. I'll explain. It was one of those press conferences. Number one, we're having a press conference. We're not used to having that for 4 years. We have a current president of the United States who doesn't talk to anybody. Brett Baer joins us now. That's where Senator John Fetterman was last night. Brett, welcome back. First off, your comment on these fires as we're digesting this in real time.
Yeah, Brian, good morning. It's a hellscape. Some of these pictures are really unbelievable, the video and images coming out. Obviously, the people there from Bill Melugin and La Jeunesse, Jeff Paul, saying that they are getting real, you know, emergency reactions from authorities that they haven't seen, you know, as far as the size, scope, and potential because of this hurricane force winds. That it could cause a lot of damage.
We had William La Jeunesse all morning, and we saw one fire truck, and that was in Malibu. Last night when you guys were on the air, there was really nothing in Malibu, and then it just blew. So in case you don't know, Pacific Palisades is just south of Malibu, Malibu a little bit further up. Pacific Palisades, home to Jennifer Aniston, Bradley Cooper, Adam Sandler, I mean, the who's who, Michael Keaton, the who's who of celebrities. So you know it's expensive, it's rich. And it's usually safe. So this is stunning to a lot of people.
It is. And listen, there'll be a lot of analysis of what they could do, can do. You know, there's all this stuff about water and those issues. But right now it's about getting people to safety. And, you know, when you have authorities and fire officials saying, get out of your car and run if you want to live, that's a different scenario.
I just want to bring you to this. Steve Guttenberg. Famously of Cocoon, big guy in Police Academy, he stepped up in real time, and he was on this from Fox News Digital. He was noticing that people were doing just what you said, Brett. They were just getting out of their cars and running. But he's saying you got to do one thing, too. Cut 28.
we've had small fires, but this is definitely the biggest one, and it's just burning out of control in certain areas. I was able to make it up here as a sort of a pocket where there is no fire, so everybody's safe. And I just wanted to see what I can do to help out some of my neighbors. But it's a ghost town. Everybody's gone. And I think that's what's important, that what it should be in a big fire like this. And a few minutes, I'm going to make my way down and get back down to the bottom and see if I can help out there.
And he went on to say, if you're leaving, leave your keys in your car because it's blocking the fire trucks. So a lot of people were panicking, get out of that car, just leave your keys. You got to trust people. Your car's going to go up anyway, perhaps, but it's got to get out of the way. So you need a bulldozer to move the cars to get the fire trucks in. It's a good point.
Yeah, it's a mess. And hopefully it dies down today, but the forecast is not looking good.
All right, so let's move on and talk about something less important. That's life and death. But let's just talk about the next administration coming in. President Trump making a lot of news yesterday. First off, Gulf of Mexico will be Gulf of America. Still looking at Panama. You got to get China out of it. It's a great point. We've been ignoring that for a long time. But Greenland, an exclamation point put on that mission when Donald Trump Jr. arrived there with Charlie Kirk in tow. Your thoughts about where this heading? Strategically, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people were thinking in this election Panama and Greenland were going to be the top things going in. But the Trump world says, listen, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We're going to handle increasing energy. We're going to handle locking down the border. We're going to handle the big issues on Capitol Hill once the legislative stuff gets ironed out. But there'll be a whole bunch of executive orders that deal with a whole bunch of things right at the top. That said, these are the shiny things, and it's in the front of the president's mind, and therefore he's getting asked about it. So he says some things about it. If I had to guess, I don't think we're using military force. But of course, when he says, I'm not going to rule anything out, that becomes the headline. And you heard Senator Fetterman saying, listen, everybody can't go to a freak out place, you know, turn it to 11 on reaction for everything he says. That said, you know, if you look at the strategic importance of Greenland, it is all about China. It's about natural resources. It's about rare earth minerals. It's about passageways for shipping lanes that maybe you wouldn't even have to use Panama. Panama is all about China and Chinese influence down there. So it is a bigger picture. It's not just about expansionism of the U.S. That said, I mean, I think it's in the back burner. It's not the front priority.
You know, I thought it was very interesting yesterday when he was talking about, you got to see a little of the Trump team, these czars in place. Steve Witkoff comes out and says, you know, making great progress thanks to what's happening in Qatar. And you have the Biden administration saying, you know, we've been talking to Steve Witkoff about what's happening, about getting hostages out. So we're seeing in some ways, like Michael Waltz says, he's getting along with Jake Sullivan, in some ways, cooperations between the two on a situation where nobody can take their eye off the ball. And then I see President Macron say Iran is dangerously close to a point of no return when it comes to a nuclear weapon. I mean, it's hard to imagine a more perilous time in the Middle East, Brett.
It is perilous. It is also some optimism, you know, from Witkoff about negotiations. You know, it's interesting that he's been in now in office. He's been the envoy for the president-elect in the transition, but still has been working and traveling overseas and to the Middle East and working with the Biden administration. He actually credited the Biden folks for working alongside. And because it has the power of the incoming president, I think it has a little bit more juice as far as, you know, what's happening. Sounded optimistic, but we've heard that before. I don't think we have heard the back end where if it doesn't happen, the hostages released, that whatever hell is going to be unleashed, we don't know what that looks like. But it is a forceful statement from the new president.
Here it is, cut 24.
We want to get back those hostages for Israel and for us. You know, we do have people that are hostages being held. And I'll just say it again. If this deal's not done with the people representing our nation, by the time I get to office, all hell is going to break out.
instead of hell being rained on Netanyahu and told not to go into Rafah, which we know was foolish because that's where Sinwar was and that's where we found all the tunnels that went from, not we, but the IDF found all the tunnels, much more extensive from Egypt into Gaza. Now, all of a sudden, you have a president going in there basically saying, I will take the reins off. So either I don't think he's talking about putting the Navy SEALs in there. I'm not sure. But he's trying to say there is a deadline now. And I think that works for everyone. Brett McGurk did not complain. He's representing. Hochstein did not complain. He's representing the previous administration, too. And then we have in Doha, in Qatar, I'm in touch with some people over there. They're optimistic something's going to happen. Brett, I think the number is 34 hostages there. If you want a cessation of violence, if there's any hope, you got to return the hostages. Question is, from Israel's perspective, how many prisoners do they have to give up?
Yeah, that's a question. That's obviously a negotiation that's going forward. I think you're right on deadlines. In fact, I've been told by folks in Trump world that there's some of the communications with the Biden folks have been to, you know, have the president-elect put something out on True Social because it moves the needle much more than the current president saying something or issuing something would do. So, you know, listen, there has been this transfer almost of power before the transfer of power. And when it comes to foreign policy, it's already happening. And we'll see if it's to the benefit.
All right, Brett, who do you have on tonight? Do you know?
Oh, Britt Hume's going to be on tonight. I think we're going to have some guests about the fires because I think it's a massive story. And then, well, I don't know. We got a lot of stuff going on.
All right. Sounds good. Great job. By the way, is Senator Fetterman probably the most interesting guest in Washington?
By far. By far. And, you know, his relationships with Republicans like Katie Britt from Alabama are a template, I think. You know, I do that Common Ground segment and the podcast, and I really think that that is the way forward. I would expect more people to follow his lane. He's the new Manchin with a new kind of talking style that's really plain spoken, and people really love it.
All right, so I have some hope out in terms of some people going across the party lines. Tom Suozzi wrote an editorial in the New York Times, says, it's time for Democrats to reevaluate how they deal with Trump this time. So I will let you know how that goes. That's coming up at a different hour here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'll tune in.
All right. Thanks so much. 1-866-408-7669. Calls next, then Rich Lowry. A bunch of stories, a lot of balls in the air. Keep it here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I watched their news conference, and I thought it was a very good news conference. I think they've come a long way. Meta, Facebook. I think they've come a long way. I watched it. The man was very impressive.
So what Donald Trump is referring to is an interview we did yesterday with on Fox and Friends with Joel Kaplan. He is the new hired Meta Chief Global Affairs Officer who actually worked in the Bush administration. Everybody knows he's conservative. And then you have Dana White, probably the best friend, just put out friendship, that Donald Trump has, I think, as far as I know. He is now on the Meta board. And they come out yesterday and say, we're getting rid of fact check. It's a third party that everyone, and I agree, is biased. So we're going to get rid of it. And people are saying, and they're going to do community notes like X. And he freely admitted to Joel Kaplan that X is success and X is change. And their exposure of what was going on behind the scenes with the FBI, with Democrats, and people's agenda, political agenda coming across on a very powerful platform. Have they changed? People were writing me all day yesterday and saying, Brian, are you the most naive person in the world? Zuckerberg hasn't changed. He's just doing this for pure business purposes. Maybe. But how come he said what he said to Joe Rogan over the summer when it was not even clear that Trump had a nomination yet, that the FBI came to him in the summer before the laptop, Hunter's laptop, and said, look out for Russian disinformation. And when it came across in the fall, they knew right away to shadow ban it and ban it and ban you if you reposted it, even if you are the White House press secretary. So one of the people who's having trouble getting over it is Seth Dillon. Seth Dillon is the Babylon Bee CEO. And he said he almost got destroyed because of Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Cut 19.
We've been fighting the battle for free speech for a long time. The fact-checking was something that literally almost killed the Babylon Bee. We were getting fact-checked so relentlessly. So many of our jokes were getting rated false. You know, silly jokes like CNN purchases industrial-sized washing machine to spin the news in before publishing it. Or, you know, AOC goes on The Price is Right and guesses everything is free. These like silly jokes are getting rated false, and the media was characterizing us as traffickers in misinformation under the guise of satire. Those are the exact words from a New York Times report. And so, you know, we were facing this situation where we were being threatened with demonetization and deplatforming because we were spreading fake news. But that's literally what satire is, right? Funny fake news.
So think about this, how ridiculous that is. Don't tell me it's fair and it's balanced when you're going after with somebody who is using humor to talk about how ridiculous some of your policies are. And they say, well, it's not true. Well, it's called humor. Sebastian Maniscalco, does he get pulled off the stage when he starts exaggerating his family life? Well, we can't prove that. We haven't spoken to your parents. How nuts is that? So when X got bought, Elon Musk, who everyone thought was a left-wing guy with the number one electric car company in the world, he says, I bought it to put them back on. He wasn't even with Trump at the time. So among the people that are upset by this is the FTC chair, Lina Khan. Listen to this clown on CNBC yesterday, cut 18.
It is true that the FTC has been very successful, including in its ongoing litigations against Amazon and Facebook. And so it's only going to be natural that those companies are going to want to come in and see, can they get some type of sweetheart deal?
Right?
Can they get some type of settlement that's cheap, that settles for pennies on the dollar, and lets them escape from a liability finding in court? Of course, they would want a sweetheart deal, and I hope future enforcers wouldn't give them that.
Right. So he says it's all business, that they're trying to get a sweetheart deal, get on the good side of Trump. So when the penalty comes down for Facebook being a monopoly and Google, too, that's some of the things that'll happen. Now, look, some people are not going to believe it. They're going to say, you know, Zuckerberg, the Zuckerbucks, they really flipped an election, some would say. I don't doubt it. $400 million put into key districts in order to flip states the Democrats' way. And while he says I gave to both sides, he gave something like a tenth of what he gave to Democrats. Maybe he feels guilty and understands Republicans are in power now. I actually also think, like Joe Rogan thinks, I think Joe Rogan's not a conservative, never will be. But I think he fell prey to Donald Trump is evil. He must be stopped for any reason. Listen to what a racist he is. And one of the things that popped up that stuck with Rogan, because I listen to him all the time, is when they came out and said after Charlottesville that Donald Trump said basically made excuses for Nazis and white supremacists. When as you play the whole clip, he said there are good people on both sides, but there's no goodness in Nazis and white supremacists. But he says there were good people trying to keep those statues up. And then when he realized how he was being used and being drawn in by a media narrative of the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, and others, he got angry. And then Trump pops up again, overcomes two assassination attempts, a formidable field in the primaries, and said, you know what, I'm going to give this guy a second chance. And they end up being friends.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Joe Biden, the man who depleted the strategic petroleum reserve in the election year so he could artificially say that the price of gasoline was coming down, now is doing everything in his power to remove gasoline from the marketplace. This is the worst type of cynicism. It's why people don't trust people in Washington. But on any policy level, how can you be more inconsistent? Yeah, this is designed to sabotage Donald Trump coming into office. But the problem with sabotage is you're really sabotaging the American people. That's the impact of these anti-energy policies that Joe Biden is trying to push through.
So that is Ari Fleischer's analysis, and it's right on the money, because what he's referring to is 48 hours ago, Joe Biden went out of his way to ban oil drilling off the east and west coast, something like 320 million acres off the east and west coast of America for the good of the environment. Sickening. Rich Lowry writes about it as editor of the National Review and author of The Case for Nationalism. Rich, welcome back. Ari Fleisch is 100% right there, and you want Trump to reverse this stuff, but it's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, I know. We had these perverse decisions a couple times in the first term, right? Obama did something out the door, and Trump would try to reverse it. They say, no, no, you can't do that unilaterally. Wait a minute. The other guy just imposed it unilaterally. So the argument is that the law under which they're doing this is kind of a one-way ratchet. Once the president decides to prohibit drilling in federal waters, no one, presumably including that president himself, if he changed his mind, can't reverse it, which is crazy. I don't think that's going to stand. But it certainly complicates things, and that's what they want to do. They want to be able to say we've protected more land and water, so this is part of his legacy. That was a Bill Clinton play as well. But Trump, you know, obviously, I think this is one of the areas where he's most likely to succeed and where it's going to have a wonderful effect on the country is just putting the pedal to the metal, no pun intended, on oil and gas exploration and electricity generation and all that. It's such an inherent national strength. It's not like it's gone away. Fortunately, there's limits to how much you can crimp it. We're actually producing a little more crude oil under Biden than we did at the peak under Trump, but there's even more that we can do, and he's got a fantastic team on this energy stuff.
And you know what saved Obama? Nothing to do with him. It was the resiliency and resourcefulness of the frackers that started in the 70s and finally came to fruition. They figured it out during his time. And out comes this natural gas, and he looks like a guy that revitalized the energy industry, but it has nothing to do with that.
Nothing. Yeah, it's the ingenuity of our oil sector and American entrepreneurs and inventors. You know, Ohio and Pennsylvania, major national natural gas states. Anyone have that on their bingo card 10 years ago? North Dakota, major oil producer. Texas, which people are saying is tapped out, more than doubled its oil production over the last 10 years. It's truly extraordinary. And Trump realizes it. And this is one thing we heard in the press conference. He knows how important this is, and it's going to be a huge part of his priorities.
Absolutely. Also, when it comes to this Ukraine-Russia war, if you want to help our allies, like Japan with natural gas and South Korea with natural gas, if you want to help Western Europe, you've set up these terminals. We have the natural gas to do it. And if not, don't tell them to stay off Russian gas if we are not doing our utmost to deliver. And guess what? President Biden told Mike Johnson, it's like, you got to lift this ban on new drilling leading up to the election. And he said, we didn't lift a ban. He goes, there is no ban. He goes, no, there's a pause right now. Biden didn't even know it. Governor Shapiro knew the people of Pennsylvania were going to make his party pay the price for that. And Biden didn't even know it.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of this. Who's coming up with these executive orders and these policies at the end? And yeah, the liquid natural gas terminals have been paused. And that's the other aspect of it. It's not just drill, baby, drill. That's a good catchphrase for it all. But there's so much infrastructure that needs to be built and that hasn't been built. There's so much that's screwed up the electricity generation and put our grid at risk with the subsidies to the solar and the wind. So there's a lot to be done here. And it's one of the areas, besides maybe immigration, that I'm most confident it's going to get done and make a big difference.
So yesterday we found out about a big investment from, I think it was one of these Arab investors in the UAE, that talked about he wants to put millions of dollars now into our infrastructure and build more terminals, energy terminals, data centers. For this country, because we need AI. AI has got to be fueled from some way, shape, or form. So we're looking to bring that here. A lot of big business people are contacting Trump. Do you ever remember anything like this?
No, and I was thinking about it yesterday. It's a little bit like he's the governor of a state. You know how governors, they compete for business, and then when someone comes in to build something big, you know, the governor holds a press conference with the person. Usually the president of the United States doesn't do it, but Trump is so focused on that aspect of our economy. He made a difference the first time around. It's going to be a real focus here. And a key thing he said, I don't know how this would work or the technicalities of it, about easing the permitting if you're doing more than a $1 billion investment. The permitting is just a debacle. and the regulation is a debacle. And we've seen it, ironically, in Biden's own agenda, right? They can't build anything. They spent all this money, but nothing's been built because it's all tied up in red tape. So to the extent we can remove the red tape, that's a huge economic benefit as well. And I suspect that'll be a big focus of DOGE.
And Lee Zeldin, too, working with the EPA and working with the Interior. Governor Burgum, who will hopefully be Secretary Burgum shortly. Cut 11 is this announcement of this investment.
I'm thrilled to announce today that DMACC will be investing at least $20 billion over a very short period of time into the United States, and they may go double or even somewhat more than double that amount of money. It's a great thing, and I believe he will say that he's doing it because of the fact that he was very inspired by the election.
So that's another one. I saw the CEO of NVIDIA, number one company in the world, said, I would love to sit down and meet with Trump. I saw it yesterday, this morning on Bloomberg, almost as if to say, how do I do it? Mm-hmm. All you have to do is make a call. You'll be down there.
Yeah,
and let's
exactly.
get everything going.
He's the most accessible president of the United States we've ever had in that sense.
Right. So Rich, yesterday the president did make a lot of news. Number one, having a press conference, that's unique. We haven't had that in 4 years. Someone speaking off the cuff who's not yelling and angry all the time. Here's something that he said that I would imagine that people weren't expecting. For example, about Canada, the Panama Canal, and more. Cut two.
Said you were considering military force to acquire Panama and Greenland. Are you also considering military force to annex and acquire Canada?
No. Economic force. Because Canada and the United States, that would really be something. You get rid of that artificially drawn line, and you take a look at what that looks like, and it would also be much better for national security. Don't forget, we basically protect Canada. But here's the problem with Canada. So many friends up there. I love the Canadian people. They're great. But we're spending hundreds of billions a year to protect it.
And he went on to say, you know, that's not right. And he says, we don't need them to make cars there. We can do it here. And we don't need their dairy. We got plenty of it here. How did this happen? So right away, Trudeau came out and said, there isn't a snowball chance in hell that Canada will become part of the United States. Foreign minister, something similar. But the Canadian Conservative Party leader says, Canada will never be the 51st state. We are a great and independent country. We're the best friend of the U.S. We spend billions of dollars fighting with them against Al-Qaeda. We supply the U.S. with billions of dollars of high-quality, totally reliable energy. Our weak and pathetic Liberal Party has failed to make these obvious points. I will fight for Canada when I am prime minister. We will rebuild our military and take back control of the border, secure both Canada and the U.S. Then he starts sounding, and he actually says Canada first. So,
yeah.
I mean, this is somebody the president can work with.
It is. You know, that guy is great. He is great. It probably helps him electorally to be able to achieve a little distance from the United States and Trump, because that's part of the charge, and doesn't play well up there. You know, you like these crazy Americans. But we're not going to tariff Canada into submission, into becoming the 51st state. It's just not going to happen. We've tried to invade Canada, depending on how you count, two or three times during our history. It's never worked out. They've established their independence. Very important to have them in as an ally. But I think most of this, Brian, is just working people, right, to get a bit better deal down the line, maybe having a little fun, trolling. Obviously, that was part of calling Justin Trudeau governor, which is hilarious. But I think it's working towards deals. I'd be very surprised if we end up owning the Panama Canal, Greenland, or Canada. But I would say Greenland would be the most likely of those three.
Right. But I would say one thing. I think he's plowing the ground for China. If you look at Panama, the whole canal, if you look at Greenland, this is about China.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows it. So he'll wait his time for President Xi. That's the thing he's got to tackle, the hacking, which has been unprecedented and from their perspective, very successful. And also China, when it comes to what's happening with Taiwan, they're actually upgrading the tempo in which they're harassing that island. We got to pick up the pace in delivering the weapons. So I think the president realized that it's beyond trade now. Things have got markedly worse since he left. So I think he's saying, number one, get out of our hemisphere. Next, I'm sure he's going to bring up Cuba. And I'm sure that Maduro is celebrating his inaugural, which was a total sham. And the Biden people got walked over. He said, if you have a free and fair election, we'll start buying our oil again. They don't have one. We bought our oil anyway.
Right.
So these are the type of things. I think he's there's a method to the madness. And I was speaking to someone very close to Trump. This is not arbitrary. People thought he's just, you know, he's free, you know, freestyling. He's not.
Yeah. So that, yeah, you're right. There's a larger geopolitical context there, and it's China lurking over the horizon, or maybe not even over the horizon anymore. You do have a Hong Kong company that runs those ports on the other side of the canal, and Hong Kong is no longer independent. And we know that Chinese companies do not have any independence from the Chinese government. What we learned from the Meta debacle, by the way, is that maybe American companies didn't have as much independence from the U.S. government as you would have thought. And that's another big change that's happened the last couple weeks. There's really a massive, and Mark Zuckerberg mentioned this explicitly, I was sort of surprised, just a massive cultural signal sent by this election that the woke nonsense is over and the captivity is ended, and you're free to actually act rationally again.
And by the way, Joel Kaplan said that on our show yesterday, and then it was put out on a tape by Mark Zuckerberg the day before about three things are changing, including fact-checking. They're going to go more of the community notes X way.
Yep.
Are you a believer? Do you think this is sincerity? Is this pure business?
I don't know whether it's sincere or not. I don't really care as long as they actually do it. And I think it'd be very hard not to do it given the specific commitments they've made in such a high-profile way. Now, there's one thing. Zuckerberg gave a great speech in 2019 at Georgetown about free speech and then didn't follow up at all. And in fact, they slid the other way. I think it'll be very hard for them to do that here. So whether it's sincere or not, it doesn't matter as long as the policy happens. And this is another, the election was a huge cultural shift, and also Elon Musk's acquisition of X, a huge inflection point in this debate. You know, everyone said he's crazy and he's dictatorial and he's going to ruin the company. It's been a huge success. It's shown there's another model for how to do this, and a lot of Silicon Valley is moving his way. It's an incredible thing.
It is, and they say the AI are less woke than Silicon Valley, and Silicon Valley's unwoking themselves.
Right.
So this could be. Well, nobody wants a conservative. I don't want a conservative Oregon. I just want a social media should be social media, and that's where you go. That's why I believe you got to ban TikTok. Why would we give the news feed to China? Don't tell me they're not controlling it. When's the last time you saw a pro-Israel post from their newsfeed or pro-Taiwan? It's not happening. So
yeah.
We have to be smart about that. I know TikTok is popular. Sell it to an American company. This is where I hope
totally
Trump
agree.
Fails. It doesn't go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, totally agree.
Rich, thanks so much. Always
all right.
Great.
All right. Talk soon.
Check out his story. Trump can't reverse Biden's energy policy soon enough. Next is your turn. 1-866-408-7669. You can write me at BrianKilmeade.com. I want to explore more about this Facebook. And are you a believer that they've changed their ways?
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
After the 2016 election, when Zuckerberg was being beat up, supposedly around allowing misinformation that elected Trump, he then went on to censor true stories about vaccine side effects. He censored information about COVID potentially coming from a Chinese lab, which now I think most people believe it did come from. The Hunter Biden laptop, as you mentioned, but also accurate information about climate change, about the reality of biological sex. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is reason to be skeptical here. I think the best news, though, is it appears they're going to defund those fact-checking organizations, which were really censorship organizations. And then he said move the other content moderation from California to Texas because the California content censors are just too biased.
So that is Schellenberger saying, yeah, I'm a little skeptical. Look what he's done in the past. But look, he's already made some moves that are currently going to change things. If you move paid fact-checkers, third parties out, that the claim is, and I believe it, that they are biased against anything conservative or anything that's not Anthony Fauci approved, then things are going to change. Nina Jankowicz from Blue Sky on Blue Sky, which is the rival, I guess, to X for the left. He said, let's be clear. The fact checkers have not been politically biased, as Zuck says, but have been perceived as such because of the politically motivated efforts to smear them, one that Zuck is now participating in and capitulating to. Facebook has already contributed to the demise of journalism, and this would be the final nail in the coffin. So what was it? Did they have it right with the fact checks, or are they doing it wrong? Crazy, in my view. You can't have it both ways. You know, Nina Jankowicz, the old the person there that had herself said she was going to be the truth teller, someone to oversee journalism and decide what was good and what wasn't. It was Joel Kaplan yesterday talking about how he wants to start anew. Cut 21.
Well, Mark's always going to be Mark Zuckerberg, and but I think there is a real opportunity to work with the new administration, both on free expression, but also on American leadership in technology and innovation. This is something we've seen President Trump is really focused on, making sure that we maintain U.S. competitiveness and leadership on technology, things like AI. Those are obviously super important to our company and our industry, and we'll look forward to working with the new administration to advance those goals.
So why wouldn't the fact checkers be upset? Because they get a lot of money. According to Full Facts Funding Page, that's the name of the group that was hired by Meta, the company received more than $3.1 million from Facebook between 2019 and 2023. They went on to say a third-party fact check in another program, they got paid $466,000. So in 2023 alone. So why wouldn't you be upset if Mark Zuckerberg called up and said, don't need you anymore. We're going to have people on our payroll who are going to write checks, who are going to be looking at things that are egregious, not opinions. We're not going to fact check opinions. Think about how bad they were on X and other things. When it was Twitter, they were taking Seth Dillon's Babylon Bee and saying it's not true. Jokes, by definition, are not true. Should Jay Leno and Johnny Carson have been censored during those days? Now, Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert will never be censored because they do everything way to the left. In fact, they'll be underlined as they put up as templates on how to do it right. But when you're censoring jokes and sarcasm and parody and satire, and we accepted it. Like, look, I was not that tapped into Babylon Bee. I watched them with Tucker and see him on the channel. I go, okay, kind of funny. Some of those headlines are funny. But the more I listened to it, I listened to Barry Weiss's podcast with Seth Dillon, who bought it in 2018, the more I realized, hysterical, number one. And number two, I'm so glad they survived. And they had the money to survive. They almost were destroyed. A comedy site.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm so glad you're here. And 3,000 miles away is where I used to live, over in Malibu, and it's on fire. Pacific Palisades on fire. Santa Monica fully evacuated. Now they're saying Pasadena on fire, and they're not all connected. They're close, but they're not connected. And the thing about this area, it is the rich of the rich. I'm talking about Jennifer Aniston, Adam Sandler, Michael Keaton, they're all there. And the reason I point out, too, is to show you how unprecedented and unorthodox this fire is because, you know, they're usually the safest areas, the most secure areas, and there's very few ways to get out of these areas. And now they're finding out, get your kids and get out. I don't care how famous you are, leave your car and go. So we'll follow that story. We're not going to ignore it. Selena Zito standing by this hour. She's going to be talking about what we did yesterday, my interview with the new chief operating officer with Meta, conservative, who had a big announcement about Meta, Facebook, looking a lot like X, Musk. Congressman Tom Suozzi at the bottom of the hour. Suozzi, like Fetterman, has gone out of his way to say, at least say, I think we have to treat Trump differently as Democrats. Is he for real? Tom Suozzi, a New York congressman. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We want to get back those hostages for Israel and for us. You know, we do have people that are hostages being held. If this deal's not done by the time I get to office, all hell is going to break out.
Yes, and let's hope we get something done. And why shouldn't it get done? Can he do it? President-elect Trump wants hostages out of Gaza by Inauguration Day. Meanwhile, Iran must have a nuclear weapon. They're on fast track. According to French President Macron, they're almost at the point of no return. What can Trump do in the next 13 days to free them and stop Iran?
Number two.
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. We're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X.
I believe it. Facebook didn't like what they saw in the mirror and proclaimed they have changed their ways and will stop being biased. We review their moves and ponder their sincerity. Google, are you next?
Number one.
There's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. There's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. I do think it's a responsible conversation. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana Purchase?
Trump agenda on full display as he rocks Mar-a-Lago, Panama, and Greenland, and so much more in his free-willing press conference. But there's a method behind it. Let's bring in Selena Zito, nationally syndicated columnist located in Pennsylvania. And she was texting me during our interview with Meta and Facebook. And I just got to get on your, from what you know right now, and I'll play some sound bites from our audience shortly. But Selena, from what you know right now, what's behind this change in Facebook?
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. And I did talk to Senator Fetterman yesterday, too. So
great. I want to hear about that.
Interesting. But, you know, here's the thing. I interviewed Zuckerberg in 2019. And I really tried to peel back with him the notion that Facebook, part of Facebook's problem and disconnect with the people who enjoy using it, is that there were not enough people on his board and that worked for Facebook, now it's Meta, who had cultural diversity, right? People that went to a state school, people who sit in a pew every Sunday. And we had a really fascinating discussion about that. And at that time, he said, you know, that's something I do need to do. And I do need to focus on. And so you saw the kernels of that already starting in 2019. I think 2020, he was still too focused on having people with all having the sort of same worldview and all living in the same places, right? Places mostly of wealth and power, and very disconnected from the people who like to use Facebook to connect with people and share information, but also get their news. And so I think that the way he has been treated by the Democrats and the way that he sees the Democrats operate, plus the way he sees that Elon Musk has also had a reversal of worldview, I think has impacted him. And I know people completely trust him. We should always be skeptical. However, we should also give people the space to be able to implement things that they think reflect the greater among us.
Right. I mean, it could be pure business. Wow, I have a Republican in there. I can't continue. He remembered Zuckerbucks, $400 million in key districts and could have flipped an election. I mean, then he went on Joe Rogan. I thought this was the turning point. And people say, well, he just knew Trump would win. He knew Trump would win? Really? Last summer? You knew Trump would win? He came out and said, you know, the FBI came to me in the summer before the election and said, the Russians expect an October surprise. The Russians are going to be up to some disinformation. And when it popped up, we knew about it because the FBI tipped us off. And Joe Rogan's jaw dropped to the ground. He said, they did what? And then we find out with the exposure of the Twitter files, the FBI, Adam Schiff, others were all manipulating social media, that social media outlet. And I want to find out what they were up to with Facebook, just like we now know what they were up to with Twitter, which is now X.
Right. Right. You're exactly right. And, you know, I interviewed Zuckerberg at about that time, not with the Rogan interview, but, you know, right before the election. And I could sense this that something wasn't sitting right with him. Right. But I couldn't get him to go there. It was not someone that I had interviewed before. So that relationship trust hadn't been built yet. But I could tell. And if you look at the interview, it's in the New York Post. You can see that something is going on throughout that interview.
Right.
And so I think, and I'm skeptical, you know, making a guess here, but I think this is a man who feels incredibly used and regretful and sort of has his eyes wide open right now. And you see that just doesn't happen with people like Mark Zuckerberg. That has happened with a lot of people. That is why we had a very different election cycle this year. There are a lot of people who sort of had an awakening and an understanding that they have been hoodwinked for a while.
I want you to hear Joel Kaplan yesterday. Cut 23 is the Meta Chief Global Affairs Officer.
The idea was they're independent fact checkers, but they've just been too biased. And so what we're going to do instead is adopt a system like X has of community notes. So we're just going to rely on our own community of users to provide people more information about what they're seeing. And we think that's going to work great.
So that's what they're going to do, community notes. They say unless it's egregious and they're calling for an overthrow of the American government. But again, that's going to be tough to figure out what to do. But a lot of people are pushing back on what he's trying to do. This Nina Jankowicz posts this on Blue Sky. Remember, she was supposed to be the authentic, that officer, that controversial officer on Truth.
Oh, yes.
With the Biden administration. She said, let's be clear, the fact checkers have not been politically biased. As Zuck suggests, they have perceived as such because of politically motivated efforts to smear them, one that Zuck is now participating in and capitulating to. Facebook has already contributed to the demise of journalism, and this will be the final nail in the coffin. Well, which one is it? Did they have it right going to the fact checkers, or do they have it right now that they're leaving them behind?
Well, here's the challenge, Brian, and you and I see this all the time in our coverage. Our big corporations, right, our cultural curators, whether they're the boardrooms of a big corporation, the boardrooms of a newsroom, the boardrooms in Hollywood, sports, they have filled themselves with people making decisions who all share the same worldview. They are all from the same centers of wealth and power. They Yep. all went to the same kinds of schools. So in their worldview, nothing is wrong because they don't have that diversity of experiences. You know, they talk about diversity a lot, but they rarely include diversity that includes people. You know, I would argue that if our boardrooms in our major corporations today had people on them that went to a community college or a state college or sits in a pew every Sunday or, you know, it does volunteer work and coaches Little League baseball, that they would have more balanced decision-making coming out of those boardrooms.
I would think so, too, because a lot of times, especially now with affirmative action for years, there's a lot of people just say, but if you don't have a legacy, a lot of people don't get into those universities. And a lot of people don't, you know, there's a lot of people in these elite institutions banking on down in politics. They don't get hired unless they're from those elite universities. Senator yeah, John Fetterman, a blue-collar Democrat from a purple state who you talked to, said this to Brett Baer yesterday when he came to President Trump talking about Greenland, Panama, and everything else. Cut 9.
There's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. There's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. I do think it's a responsible conversation if they were open to acquiring it and, you know, whether just buying it outright. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana purchase? Alaska was pretty a great deal, too. $50 million, I think it was. It was referred to as Seward's Folly. And now that was Alaska now. So open to having all kinds of conversations as well. It's not helpful to freak out. Some things might work out, some may not, but that's part of ongoing dialogue. But he hasn't even take office in 2 weeks. And, you know, we really need to pace ourselves if we're going to freak out over every last tweet or every last conversation or press conference.
So this guy is so refreshing, so interesting. I don't agree with everything, but at least he's taking things at face value rather than wondering what the political doctrine is. What did you find when you talked to him?
Well, I found the same thing. We talked at length yesterday, not just about that, but also about the Lincoln Riley bill, and he co-sponsored it. And, you know, I mean, when we made Alaska a state and we made Hawaii a state and we have other territories like Guam and Puerto Rico, these are strategic decisions that protect the country. In places where we're not at, right? And so, you know, Alaska was a strategic decision because of where it's located, and the same with Hawaii. I understand the strategy about Greenland, and not just militarily and protection, but also for natural resources. The same with the Panama Canal. So he's right. It's not bonkers. And you know, he talked yesterday about the Lake and Riley bill, but also just
that he voted for.
He co-sponsored. Well, he hasn't voted for it yet. I don't think the Senate has voted yet. I did talk to Congressman Chris DeLuzio, also a Democrat from Western Pennsylvania. He voted for it. He supported it. So did Brendan Boyle, who's over in Philadelphia. These are members of Congress in Pennsylvania who understand that the state is changing, and they understand the most important thing that you're supposed to do when you are elected to Congress, whether it's the U.S. Senate or the House, is to represent your state and or district. And that is what Fetterman's doing. He's doing what you're supposed to do when you are elected to office, not represent your party, but represent the people back home.
So now it's going to be an interesting process, too, because he's interviewed. He sat down with anybody that wants to meet with him who President Trump nominated. And he says, right, I'm voting for Elise Stefanik. He had a very good meeting with Pete Hegseth. He says it's not out of the – I have a source that says it's not out of the question that – he indicated to him that he'd be open to voting for him, which is interesting.
Yep.
He says, I can't wait to meet with RFK this week. A lot of people, Democrats, don't even want to meet with him. By the way, I don't think Mitch McConnell has met with Pete Hegseth. So that's how unusual it is, and even though it shouldn't be, that he's going to meet with all these guys. So he's open to voting for some of them. And everyone's voting for Rubio.
Right, right. And you know, that has all always been who the core of John Fetterman has been. I sat down with him before he was, you know, on the national scene in January of 2017 at his home, which is across from the Edgar Thomson Works, the oldest U.S. steel, plant in the country. His house is an old car dealership. It's actually very cool. And even at that moment then, he was just, you know, the mayor of Braddock. He said, we need to be more open-minded about what Trump wants to do. This was just days before the inauguration in 2017. So he's always held these sort of open-minded positions. I think part of it is because he grew up in a Republican family. Part of it is because he lives in Western Pennsylvania and the working class has shifted to the center. And part of it is just because he's always been pragmatic.
Right.
He had to run a city. You have to be pragmatic. You have to be about getting the trains run on time. You have to be about plowing the streets, not being an ideologue the minute you put your pants on in the morning.
Selena, lastly, just on Zuckerberg overall, you believe that this is sincere, or you believe this is politically just a political necessity?
I think if you go back and look at that interview, I think it's sincere. And here's why. I could see the beginnings of it a couple years ago. I could see in those questions. I could see in his hesitancy about other questions, which he didn't reveal at that time, that the Democrats were lording over him, and he was getting really tired of it.
Selena Zito, thanks so much. Always insightful to speak with you. Our audience thanks you, too. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. 1-866-408-7669. A lot of people writing me said they don't believe in Zuckerberg at all. Ron writes this and says, I watched Joel on Fox and Friends and listened to you yesterday. Joel didn't answer a question you guys asked on Fox and Friends. They are still denying advertising for conservative Christian events. With no reason. They're still denying advertising. Okay, they lie. I'm not sure. Number one, Joel just started a month ago. So I don't think you could hold him responsible. He's coming off the Bush administration. So the one thing I did ask him, I said, can you go back and expose the files and find out what the FBI was actually doing at Facebook, like they were doing at X, which was Twitter, and when they went in there with Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss and Michael Schellenberger, they were able to expose this. He says, well, I just don't think it would do anybody any good to go back. We want to go forward, and we want to reform things. So a lot of people are writing me. Most people say don't trust him. It's not a matter of trusting him. They actually took action. They have no longer hired a fact checker. So if as long as we find out that their news feed is real and our posts stay up and the bans have virtually stopped, and it looks more like the Wild West of X, fine with that. Coming back, when we come back, Congressman Tom Suozzi, he's from the 3rd District in New York. He says his New Year's resolution is to do what's right and work across the aisle when it's possible. Is he going to be the center? Is he going to be like Senator Fetterman in the House? We'll ask him.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. There's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. I do think it's a responsible conversation if they were open to acquiring it and, you know, whether just buying it outright. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana purchase? Alaska was pretty a great deal, too. $50 million, I think it was. It was referred to as Seward's Folly.
And he went on to say, for those people who want to freak out with Trump every time, pace yourself. He's not even in office yet. Just be open to what he brings it up and don't get caught up in the unorthodox way in which he presents it. That's similar to the editorial that Congressman Tom Suozzi authored last week in the New York Times. He's Homeland Security, 3rd District of New York, right by my house over on Long Island. He wrote, let's try something different. That's the title. And how we deal with Trump. He went on to say, if Trump wants to have more effective presidency than he had the first term, he needs to embrace his inner deal maker and negotiate with the other party that holds just shy of half the seats in Congress and key governorships around the country. And if he does that, if he does that work, Democrats should meet him halfway rather than be the party of no. Joining us now, Congressman Tom Suozzi. Congressman, I love your editorial. I love your approach. What's been the feedback since you put that out?
Hey, thanks for having me on, Brian. You know, the feedback's been what you would expect. Some of the far left, more extreme people in my party are like, what are you doing? We can't make any deals. And a lot of normal people that I see on the streets and people that reach out to me and say, oh, I read your editorial, it was great, and I've sent it to my friends. And so it's been a mixed bag. I think overall it's been very positive.
But aren't you representing your area effectively when Trump wins it and you win it too?
Yeah. Trump won, President-elect Trump won my district by 19,000 votes, almost over 5%. And for me to win by 11,000 votes, at least 20,000 people had a vote for Donald Trump and Tom Suozzi. So, I think that's what my people want. My people want us to work. I think everybody in America wants this. They want us to work together to actually get stuff done to make their lives better. Everybody's sick of the finger-pointing. Everybody's sick of the partisan politics. They want us to work together to secure the border, to address inflation, to try and make their lives better.
So, you know, it's interesting because you're from New York. You're not new to Trump. You used to him before he was on The Apprentice. You know what he was like when he was promoting fights and was in Atlantic City. You know, it's the same way.
When I was the Nassau County executive, he made a contribution to my campaign. So, and I met with him a couple times in his office at Trump Tower. When I was, I don't know if I did it when I was the mayor of Glen Cove or county executive. I know I did it when I was county executive. I may have done it when I was mayor also. So I knew President Trump before. As a matter of fact, I've been in meetings with him in the Situation Room as part of the Problem Solvers Caucus. You know, Problem Solvers Caucus, 25 Democrats, 25 Republicans meet every week, try and find common ground to try and get things done. But I met with him, and he said, I know Tom longer than most of you in here. He said, I gave him a big contribution for his campaign. When he was a county executive, I said, Mr. President, that hurt me a lot when I was running in my primary. He said, oh, you liked it when I did it.
Right. And that's the way he is. You know, it's not personal, but he wants to win. And you write this. Since the day Trump announced his candidacy at Trump Tower 10 years ago, politicians, pundits, activists, members of the news media have detailed every failing, every misstep. Every word he ever spoke has been criticized. Yet he won again. People are exhausted by the endless finger-pointing, the nitpicking, the daily battling for political advantage. They want leaders to work together to get things done. I mean, that's somebody that wants to be a national figure, in my view. That's very Joe Manchin-like. That's very Senator Fetterman-like. Is that a different approach for you? And you realize when you said this that there's going to be people mad at you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always tried to run my politics that way. I think that's why, I got reelected, quite frankly. I ran for governor of New York once. I got my ass kicked in a Democratic primary. No, I did it twice. I ran for governor twice, once against Elliot Spitzer, once against Kathy Hochul, and got buried in the primary because I'm not far left enough to win a primary in New York State. But I think that's what, regular people want. And listen, I'm going to fight President Trump when I disagree with him. When he was the president the first time, I didn't agree with him trying to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. I didn't agree with deporting the Dreamers. And I'll fight back on that stuff. But I supported him when he wanted to move the embassy, American embassy, to Jerusalem. I supported him on the Abraham Accords. I supported him on when he wanted to make Mattis the defense secretary. And we had a vote on giving an exception. And I voted, worked with him on the First Step Act, which was like a criminal reform thing. I voted for the big vote yesterday. So, I mean, when I can do it, I'm going to do it, especially if that's what my people want.
So
when I got to fight, I'll fight.
So the Laken Riley Act is what you're referring to, and it passed the House 264 to 159. 216 Republicans, nobody voted against it. Only 48 Democrats voted for it. Essentially, if you commit a crime, you're an illegal immigrant, you're gone, right? You go to jail. So there's too many of them out in the streets. We saw this this guy burn this New Jersey woman alive, said, "I was so drunk." You know, he was kicked out in 2018, came back, had a minor offense, came back again, left his free room and board to go on a subway drunk and light her on fire. Like things like that.
Yeah, I've said very clearly since the beginning. I mean, Democrats should embrace the idea of deporting criminals. I mean, that's. We need to secure the border. We need to fix the asylum system. We need to treat Dreamers. We should give Dreamers a path to legalization. We should do the same thing with temporary protected status folks that we invited to America 20 and 30 years ago. We should do something about the farm workers. But there's a deal to be made here that we can find some common ground on this. And this is what the people said clearly in the election. That's what they want.
Nassau County
work together.
Nassau County is not a sanctuary county, but New York City is a sanctuary city. Where do you stand?
Well the mayor of New York City recently met with the incoming border czar, Tom Holman, and said that he's going to work with him to make sure that they can go up to Rikers Island and people that are convicted of crimes can be deported.
How do you feel about that? I know you're friends with Adams, and he wanted you to go work with him. But how do you feel? I mean, do you feel like sanctuary cities?
That's the right thing. That's what we should be doing. I don't like the term sanctuary cities because I don't think people know what it really means. I think in the case of this is an important thing, Brian. If somebody's in jail, we should be working with the federal government and the local governments to deport criminals. If I don't want the local cops doing it, though, I don't want the local police officers doing it because police officers have to do community policing. They have to build a relationship with the community. So if a person is robbed, even if they're undocumented, and they're afraid to go to the cops, then they're not going to report crimes. And where will they go for protection if they can't get protection from the cops? They'll go to gangs. That's what creates an underground community. That's the antithesis of community policing. The cops have to know who they can talk to in the community, and the community has to trust the cops. So you don't want the local police forces becoming an arm of the federal government. Plus, it violates a whole bunch of other rules. But it's as a practical matter, the cops have to be trusted by the local community, whether you're documented or undocumented. They can't get into the business of, Social Security and immigration laws. They got to enforce the local laws, and community policing is very, very important.
That's how it was intended, but how's it being used now in places like Chicago?
Oh, it's gone too far in a lot of places. I mean, it can't be that we say we're not going to cooperate with the federal government to deport criminals. That's wrong. I totally disagree with that. So, and I think that Democrats would make a big mistake, and I think that they're getting this message right so far. at least at the federal level. You know, you're going to have examples of people who are not going to get it right, and you know, a lot of commentators and political opponents are going to say the Democrats. Mm-hmm. But I would say most of the Democrats agree that we should be working to deport criminals.
Will you? I want you to hear what Fetterman said, because he's going to have a chance to vote for the bill you vote for yesterday. Here's what he said yesterday on the Lake and Riley bill. The Lake and Riley bill 32.
I have a lot of enormous respect for my colleague in the House, but I just happen to disagree on this. And for me, just like my friend and colleague in the Senate, like, it's really common sense. And I'd like to remind everybody that we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of migrants here illegally that have convicted of crimes. And why, I don't know why, you know, who wants to defend to allow them to remain in our nation after that? And now, if you're here illegally and you're committing crimes and those things, I don't know why anybody thinks that it's controversial that they all need to go.
It's common sense. It's not conservative.
It's not conservative.
I mean, we have what do we have, 57,000 illegal aliens here, as much as 87,000 at one point, that are being housed in hotels that were once nice. These people have paid the maximum dollar using taxpayer dollars. So the hotels are more than happy to turn it over to the city, and they fill it up with illegal immigrants, and they sit there and they wait, and they get free food. Now they get debit cards in some cases where they can buy their own food, and they wait. I mean, how does that help the city?
Well, I got a little pushback on that issue because, you know, I've been around a long time. You've been around a long time. And it used to be when people would come as immigrants, documented or undocumented, or, you know, seeking asylum and in the system, which is broken, and we got to fix that, it would seek its own level. People would go to communities where they knew people already. They'd find family. They'd find people from their hometown. They'd find other people, and they'd live with them. And they'd find jobs. They'd go working as landscapers and contractors and in restaurants and stuff like that. What happened was when they started shipping people up from Texas and Florida, you know, just sending them to New York, you know, in the middle of the winter, say, for example, on a bus or to just come live here. And then the city started this whole idea of housing everybody and giving them these hotels. That's when the whole thing fell apart. Now, it brought a lot of political pressure. So that's one of the reasons I think people get the message now on what we need to do on immigration. But, you know, we never housed people before. But that happened because of this artificial thing that was set up where Florida and Texas started shipping people up here. So I think
you brought up a good point. And here's the thing. If you look at all the people that Texas put up there, it's about 20,000. What it is, they are here illegally. And they said, I'd love to go to New York rather than stay in Lubbock. I don't need to stay in a border city. So I'll go. So that was a mission that was put out there. Hey, guys, you can go. And I love what DeSantis said. He said, why should Texas or Arizona, New Mexico be burdened with these immigration policies and not Narragansett, you know, and not
just created this artifact. Listen, every family, every Irish family, every Italian, my father was born in Italy. Every legal or illegal, it sought its own level. And this just created this artificial problem. Listen, it's a problem. I've been working with Morgan Luttrell from Texas and trying to find some common ground on this to build a coalition of business, right, badges, and the border so that we can, number one, secure the border. Number two, we can fix the broken asylum system. And number three, we can treat people like human beings. Have a pathway for dreamers who've been here for decades, who've graduated from college or are working a full-time job or in the military. Same thing with temporary protective status. They had an earthquake. They had a civil war or something happened. We invited them to America 20 and 30 years ago, and they still don't have status. And these farm workers, I mean, there's so many bipartisan bills out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
On all these issues, we just haven't got them over the finish line.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen these features of people in the farms in California and their families that live there, and they're technically illegal. And I think that if they left, the farmers say, we have nobody that would take these jobs, not an American. And I've seen Republicans out there and Democrats. So I think you're right.
50% of farm workers, meat packers, 50% of them are probably undocumented.
Right. So
it's going to be a real problem unless we find some common ground.
But I would think this, until you seal the border, until you stop the bleeding, then I just don't see it anything getting done. But the other
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. We got to build the wall. We got to hire the Border Patrol agents. We got to hire the immigration judges, the asylum officers. We have to get Democrats and Republicans to stop fighting each other and fight our common enemy. And the common enemy is organized crime, cartels, and coyotes that are making billions of dollars by abusing these people, getting to traverse these awful ways across the Mexico, subjecting them to this miserable life, and then making our country weaker in the process.
Well, Tom Suozzi, a lot of Democrats, and I've never heard many I have not heard many Democrats say that outside Joe Manchin. But I want you to hear this from one of the Sunday Face the Nation over the weekend.
Undercovered, underreported. That would be, to me, Joe Biden's obvious cognitive decline that became undeniable in the televised debate.
At the presidential debate with Donald Trump.
Unquestioned. And, you know, it's starting to emerge now that his advisors kind of managed his limitations. It's been reported in the Wall Street Journal for 4 years. And yet he insisted that he could still run for president. We should have much more forcefully questioned whether he was fit for office.
So that was Jan Crawford, who I've never met, just on CBS on Face the Nation, a show I've never been on, saying that she said she feels responsible for not doing a better job reporting it. I could say four or five others that I've seen in traditional newspapers say the same thing. From what you've seen, Congressman, you weren't there. I mean, you got Santos's seat. You ran for governor. But from what you see, do you think that more Democrats should have spoken up and say, man, this president's failing. He can't do the job?
Well, I'm not going to speak against President Biden. I mean, I endorsed him early on when he first ran because I thought he was the most moderate of the people running, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and others. And I really feel very fondly towards President Biden. And, you know, newsflash, he's 82 years old. But as the president of the United States of America, he did implement the infrastructure bill. He bipartisan.
No, but what do you think? No, I know what he did, but what do you think about how he's been functioning with the revelations about good days, bad days, only meeting with his cabinet 9 times in 4 years. I mean, he clearly wasn't doing the job.
Well, I think he did do a good job. I think he accomplished a lot of great things. He held the West together.
You think he's okay, Congressman?
I think he's old. I think he's 82 years old.
So is Bernie Sanders. He's at the top of his game, whether you like his game or not.
Yeah, well, I don't like his game that much.
Neither do I. But he's old, too. But he's doing, you know, I don't think he's slipping. Congressman, it's great to have you on. Hopefully we do this regular, and it's going to be exciting to see someone on both sides taking it case by case instead of looking for a D or an R. Best of luck, Congressman Tom Suozzi. Thank you.
I read your book about the culprit's spy ring.
You should. It's Long Island.
I did. I read it.
I'm honored. Thank you, Congressman.
All right, my man.
Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're going to be changing the name of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, which has a beautiful ring that covers a lot of territory. The Gulf of America, what a beautiful name. And it's appropriate. It's appropriate.
I think it's going to work. I guess in Mexico, they're not happy about it, but it's our Gulf, so let's do it. That'll be easier. That was brought up first in 2011. So the Greenland, the Panama Canal, I think it's a method is we're beginning to surround the China situation. President's using two strategies I think are effective. Number one, you know he wants to build the wall, but he's not saying much about it. He doesn't want people dug in and say, you know, I'm going to build the wall. I'm going to build a wall. And then all of a sudden, every Democrat says, if I want to get reelected, I have to stop Trump from building a wall. I can never vote for it. So I think President intentionally keeping that low profile. Number two, he's not talking about the size of the crowds on Monday's inauguration. There's a reason for it. My opinion. I don't have a source, but I could find out if I'm right. But I believe I am right. He's going to have the biggest crowd. It might be the biggest crowd ever. Bigger than Obama's. People are so pumped up that it's no longer going to be Joe Biden or the left wing of this country or people that hate the country, George Soros funded candidate, that it's Trump again. And we know exactly what to expect. Then I think they're going to say, we're going to show up. Smart about it.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Glad you're here. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We have a lot going on today. Martha McCallum will be joining us, Senator Shelley Moore Capito. She's going to be meeting with the president-elect today, along with the whole Republican conference. He's in town for Jimmy Carter's funeral. But the bigger story is 3,000 miles away from my location in New York City is a burning Los Angeles and the surrounding area, a burning Pasadena, a burning Malibu, a burning Pacific Palisades, an evacuated Santa Monica, a call for 50 strike teams. That's over 1,000 personnel and over 200 trucks. They're coming from Washington and all around. The water pressure is low. The fire is 0% contained. It's considered four separate fires. It is nuts. The elite, as well as the day-to-day middle class and working class people, from Bradley Cooper to Jennifer Aniston to Michael Keaton to Adam Sandler, this is the elite. And many of which don't have fire insurance because they just won't insure them. They'll have to do the state policy. Feel bad for the people that aren't going to get their stuff back. But, man, when you see how horrific this fire is, I've never seen anything like it. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We want to get back those hostages for Israel and for us. You know, we do have people that are hostages being held. If this deal's not done by the time I get to office, all hell is going to break out.
I can imagine. Can he do it? President-elect Trump wants the hostages out of Gaza by Inauguration Day. Meanwhile, Iran might have a nuclear weapon in an irreversible course, according to French President Macron, by Inauguration Day. What could he do in the next 13 days to free them and to stop Iran?
Number two.
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. We're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X.
I believe it too. Facebook didn't like what they saw in the mirror and proclaimed that they will change their ways and will stop being biased. We review their moves and ponder their sincerity. Hey, Google, are you next?
Number one.
There's a lot of talk about Greenland, for example. There's a lot of freakouts, you know, and of course I would never support taking it by force. I do think it's a responsible conversation. I mean, if anyone think that's bonkers, it's like, well, remember the Louisiana Purchase?
Yes, I do. And Seward's folly, he went on to say, which is Alaska. Trump's agenda on full display as he rocks Mar-a-Lago's press conference with words like, I'll take Panama, I want China out of there, and I want Greenland from Denmark, or I'll hit them with tariffs. It's a little unorthodox, but you know what's a relief? We had a press conference, no script, some notes to start, and then random questions without a list on who to call on. Senator Shelley Moore Capito also doesn't need a script. She's on Appropriations, Commerce, and Rules, and she'll be maybe part of the caucus who meets with President Trump today. Senator, welcome.
Welcome. Hey, yeah, how are we doing? I mean, I'm looking at the pictures of California, as you mentioned. It's just horrifying to see this, and hopefully they can get it under control. But as you said, it doesn't look like they are.
I mean,
so burned out cars and homes. Oh, awful.
I mean, they said, I've never heard this. It's for a day now, 0% contained. And they say, and they're running low on water. In Woodley, 0% contained, 75,000 acres burned. Mm-hmm. Palisades, same thing. In Hearst, 500 acres have burned, 2,200 over in Eaton. So we'll see where that goes. And it's going to be extremely costly. So far, thankfully, no lives lost. Senator, in the something less important, just talking about politics, what's your message and what do you think it's going to be like when you meet with President-elect today?
Well, I'm excited that the president is going to be here. We invited him, and we are going to meet with him privately, and then he's going to meet with the rest of the all the Republican senators. And I think we're going to have a free-flowing discussion, which is exactly what we need. I mean, first of all, I think we're going to give him a nice victory lap round of applause because many of us haven't seen him since the election. And then we will get down to the nitty-gritty, and that is what is his – desire? What is his plan for reconciliation? Where does he think his top priority is? How can we move this unleashing American energy and securing our borders and peace through strength agenda that he's put forward as quickly as we can? So we want to be on the same page. I think it will be great that he can hear from us. He called into the retreat that I had 2 weeks ago, and so I was really happy to accept our invitation.
So you got 53 senators. You're in the majority first time in a long time.
Well, right. But
President Biden is actually making life more difficult to you as he leaves. You know, now he is going to ban offshore drilling in 622 million acres off both coasts. You want to be an energy state. You've already been hit hard by the restrictions on coal, even though we're using coal to power our grids. Your thoughts about what he did? I thought originally, okay, big deal, just undo the executive order. But now you got to go through legislation to undo this, correct?
Well, I think the president can, President Trump will be able to undo a lot of these orders. I can't for the life of me decide why a president in his last week, and there's questions as to who's really making the decisions here, is doing all of these sweeping pardons, sweeping regulations coming out, you know, freeing people from Guantanamo Bay. And I mean, it just, to me, it speaks of, I think, a great disregard of the American people. American people voted for a different way, a different view to go forward to unleash American energy, and yet he's trying to lock it up in the last 5 days. I think that speaks to a bit of an arrogance on President Biden and his team's part, and we will undo it as broadly as we possibly can.
I mean, you should have the votes. I don't know any Republican that isn't for unleashing energy.
Oh, no.
And I don't know any in the Senate either. And I think there's people like Fetterman you can work with, and maybe Tom Suozzi, who I talked to with a previous hour, a moderate congressman, it seems, a Democrat from New York. But I want to ask you about the 11 Gitmo detainees that are left that are let go over to Oman to, according to their lawyer, live their lives and get married, two of which were bin Laden bodyguards, and one of which has not declared, as late as 2016, any regrets about being an Islamic extremist terrorist. What's he doing? If he thought this was such a good idea, why did he do it earlier?
Honestly, I do not know. This has been sort of a mantra with the Democrats that we need to close Guantanamo. It sends a wrong signal. I've visited there. It is not a horror palace. It's remote by design, but it's not as betrayed. You know, we have our military there as well. But I would say these folks should be in for life. I mean, they took over 3,000 American lives intentionally and wreaked havoc on the world, really, but particularly our own country. So I don't know why if they were going to do this, they didn't do it earlier. And I'm sorry, I don't think these people deserve anything after the horrifying deaths that they caused in our own country.
Well, the worst is yet to come. This guy, Mohammed Rahim, he might be exchanged. He's a bin Laden bodyguard, and he might be exchanged for three Americans I did not know were held against their will in Kabul, Afghanistan. So we're still we're paying the Taliban. We're giving them, air quotes, humanitarian aid, which I don't think the American people are for, but they're doing it anyway. And now we have to swap a terrorist who's going to go right back to Afghanistan, the new terror university, where he's going to be hailed as a leader and a hero. And we're going to get three of our people back that should be given back anyway.
Well, I think that also leads into, Brian, the miserable way and the unpatriotic way and insulting way that President Biden left Afghanistan. If folks were left behind, that lays right on the doorstep of the president. And he cannot make that up, in my view, by releasing one of the largest terrorists back to another terrorist-infested country. You're right. All they're going to be doing is creating new cells or creating new excitement around the cells that they already have. I don't know why, if these are top priorities, they haven't been public, they haven't been talked about publicly, and why you're waiting until the 11th hour to move forward when you think, I guess, that it can't be undone. Again, another insult to the American people.
It is. So, Senator Capito, you're going to have a chance to vote, I think, on the Laken-Riley Act to pass the House. Your thoughts?
Oh, I am a co-sponsor of the Lincoln-Riley Act. I mean, what we saw happen with her tragic death was just awful. But then when the sheets get pulled back and you see where this guy had been arrested before, where he had in New York, and we just sent him somewhere else, I think this will mandate that if aliens are detained, that they are removed from the United States and they can't reoffend and commit further offenses. That's exactly what he did. He had initial offenses. He was discovered to be illegal, committing offenses in our country. We should have then had him under detention. We didn't. We could have saved her life in that way. And, you know, having three children who have gone through school and lived in and around college campuses, it's a joyful time in a lot of young people's lives, and that's been ripped away from so many in Georgia and around the country.
So hopefully that'll pass. It did get past the House yesterday. You got about 40 Democrats who ended up fighting going for it. I want you to hear, as we move to the international front, I want you to hear what Donald Trump said yesterday. Cut 24.
We want to get back those hostages for Israel and for us. You know, we do have people that are hostages being held. And I'll just say it again. If this deal's not done with the people representing our nation, by the time I get to office, all hell is going to break out.
Well, evidently, Bernie, Brett McGurk is working over there to get them out. I think they all agree that Trump's statement's helpful. Steve Witkoff says it's been very helpful. He's going to be the special envoy to the Middle East. He's already working there. What could you tell us about this? And does that mean he thinks American troops are going to go in?
You know, the president is President Trump is not one that trigger happy in terms of moving our troops into harm's way. So I don't anticipate that would be the direction that he would go. But I do believe that he's a big supporter of Israel, and the support may come through Israel to help us recover the hostages that have not been recovered if they do not release. I think he's trying to pressure an agreement. I read an article the other day that said we were very, very close to an agreement, but then the Biden administration kept changing their minds, and that would have resulted in fully freeing the remaining hostages. I think there's a big question, too, as to how many really are still alive and in what condition, and that is extremely worrisome, I think, to not just everybody, but particularly to the families and loved ones of those who are still in captured in Gaza. So I think the president's putting the ultimate pressure on here. I think it's a smart move because I think he's not one to just say things and then not apply the greatest pressure that he possibly can. I don't look for troops going into anywhere, least of all Gaza. But we'll find out if they don't get released. We'll find out what maximum pressure means to this president.
And remember, the previous administration did not want Prime Minister Netanyahu to go into Rafah, where we found Sinwar and all those tunnels that would have resupplied Hamas to this day. They wanted a ceasefire a year ago, and the Hamas was almost fully intact then. So they were looking for political expediency. I don't think this president's for that. Real quick, rapid-fire question. On Greenland, where does Senator Capito stand?
Well, I mean, I think it's an interesting prospect. Let's see where it goes. I saw Senator Fetterman actually on TV last night saying, why don't we keep an open mind here? So I'm in the open mind category, and I don't know how serious the president really is. It sounds like Denmark is dug in, but I didn't realize we'd gotten the Virgin Islands from Denmark. Did you realize that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Or some of the islands we got from Denmark like 105 years ago. I read that in an article. I'm like, well, here we are again, Denmark. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I know that they can make their own decisions domestically.
Foreign policy. Vacation venue, that's for sure.
Well, that'll be very interesting, but there's a lot of rare earth materials there. And certainly we could build up our military base, especially because China's bulking up. Panama Canal. I think this is about China's presence, less about taking it back and the fees. Your thoughts about this focus?
Well, we built the canal and we ran it for a long time before we gave it back to the Panamanians under an agreement. I agree with you. I think China takes every advantage that they possibly can and over advantage and then applies maximum pressure. That's what you see. So Chinese ships are coming in, Chinese goods are coming in. devaluing our American products and our American workers. I think the president is doing there what he did with NATO. He's a giant wake-up call to say, hey, we need to be treated fairly and not just taken advantage of.
Rapid question. And lastly, is it going to be Gulf of America or Gulf of Mexico?
I don't know. I think Gulf of America sounds good to me. I don't know if you can change it, but I'm all for it.
All right. We got you on the record. Right. Senator Capito, okay. Good luck with the president-elect today and getting on the same page to get something out of the door quickly. Senator Shelley Moore Capito, thanks.
Yes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Martha McCallum's here. Don't ask me how I know. Okay, I saw her. Her show starts at 3 o'clock, but she wants to be on radio. And it's always been one of your goals. Is that true, Martha?
Absolutely. I'm hoping someday that I can be more like you, Brian.
Right. I've never heard you say that, and no one believes that. First off, on these fires, we've never seen anything quite like this, where we have press conferences where they say 0% contained.
I know. And you look at those images up and down the coastline with houses that are just completely wiped out. And as our reporters keep pointing out, this is affects everyone from these mansions on Malibu Beach to entire trailer parks that have been swept out. It's a stunning, awful breaking story.
And, you know, the other thing is, it's like the elite. Not that that matters. Not that anyone matters more than anybody else, but shows you how surprising it is. They usually find the safest, most secure places. But you have people like Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston, Bradley Cooper, Eugene Levy, Michael Keaton, all running. They're out of their neighborhood. Jake Steinfeld, a good friend of the show, said he's been out for a day. The whole neighborhood's gone.
Yeah. I mean, that strip between the highway and the ocean, that's some of the most expensive real estate in America. And it's lined with people like the ones you just mentioned. And many of those houses are just completely gone.
You saw William Agnes this morning. While he's on the air, one of the poles caught fire, broke in half. And you just see it go down. And this is in the pitch black. We're watching these houses go. And to think about this, last night, the fire jumped the road.
Yep.
Jumped the house and burned the lifeguard stand. I mean, how does it get through the sand to burn the lifeguard stand?
Well, the wind is helping it in that direction, which is unusual. We don't usually see it hopping across roads, so it makes it extraordinarily unpredictable and truly perilous. It's just an absolutely terrible situation. They got to get under control.
There's not much to report that we could tell you that's so different. And plus, if you're listening to this, that means you're not in the area. It's 3,000 miles away, but it certainly matters. Our second biggest city in a surrounding area.
Look at these images all over in front of us right now. Just absolutely incredible.
When we come back, what we're seeing in terms of what's happening on Capitol Hill today behind closed doors, what Mark Zuckerberg said yesterday and looks to and rocked everyone's social media world. Are things changing? Do we to believe him? What does Martha think? We'll play all sides of that. And President Trump is his unorthodox presser yesterday. It puts some people out of their minds, and other people are saying, can we calm down? can we stop pretending we don't know President Trump already? Back in a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Greenland, not only has he been talking about it for some time, but a lot of people have been talking about it for some time. This idea of acquiring Greenland for strategic purposes has happened, you know, for decades. And a close friend of Trump's suggested it to him in his first term, Ron Lauder. It's never totally gone away. But Trump is clearly in an expansionist mindset. He also keeps talking about Canada as a 51st state. That is clearly much more of a troll and sort of a dominance play. But in terms of Trump talking about military action, or at least not ruling it out, as Caitlin said, that caught a lot of people by surprise. It's not clear if that's actually something he's thinking about or something he said, because he was quite visibly in a pretty bad mood during this press conference.
I don't think he was in a bad mood during the press conference at all. Maggie Haberman claims to know everything about Trump And yet Trump keeps talking to her, yet he says most of the stuff she says is inaccurate. I don't think he was in a bad mood at all. Martha McCallum anchors the story. You've known Trump for a long time, covered him for a long time. You think he was in a bad mood?
No, that reaction would not have come out of my mouth afterwards. There's a lot of things that were brought up at that news conference that I thought were really interesting, and I think she makes good points on some of the previous points. But no, there wasn't anything that I noticed that showed he was in a bad mood.
I mean, the Greenland thing is interesting, and I was watching other channels, just especially on the repeats when I get here at 3:30 in the morning, and I was watching other channels, and they said, is this a bad message you send to Putin and Xi? Hey, if America can get Greenland, I could go get Taiwan. I could go get Ukraine. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's the wrong approach. I think that we've watched the encroachment and expansion of China all through their region. And I think if I had to guess based on the experience of covering this incoming president, that this is the kind of message he wants to send. It doesn't always necessarily mean that that's where he's going to go, but he's sending a message of strength. He's saying, we see what you're doing. We will protect our assets around the world. If it means that we need to acquire or at least have a better relationship with some of these places and allow us more dominance in more places of the oceans of the world, we understand that that's a posture that we need to be in.
Yeah, I'm going to be very curious. I also think this is a – I was talking to Michael Waltz 2 weeks ago, and he said, the only thing I'm going to caution you is don't think he's just making this up or just throwing these things arbitrarily. And it's all about China.
Yes, sending absolutely. A message.
Instead of saying, I want you out of my hemisphere, saying, okay, see you in Venezuela. I see you in Brazil. I see you in Panama Canal.
100%.
So it's beginning to push. Hey, I know what you're doing with rare earth. I know what you did with the Congo. By the way, no one, as far as I know, has put this together. Do you know some of these insidious deals that Hunter Biden was setting up with Bob Alinsky and others that he basically bowed out of? That was to finance the Belt and Road Program of China, which was created to hurt America, which consists of going to the Congo and selling rare earth mines.
100%.
Which gives you that green energy.
100%. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I remember years ago, I went to Ghana with my younger son to do this malaria project. And they drove us by the by this huge building that was the sort of the presidential headquarters of Ghana. And it looked exactly like a Chinese piece of architecture. I mean, everything about it did not scream Ghana. It was like Chinese, classic Chinese architecture in the middle of Africa. And they've been doing this for decades. And we have been asleep at the wheel watching this expansion and this influence. So you give very poor countries money and influence that way, and they become beholden to you. And that has been the plan all along.
Yeah. So I got a little off market there, off point. But that my point is, too, is like that's going to – there's two things that are going to emerge. President's failing, cognitive failings, and the other one's going to be the more proof of these deals. Last week when most of us were off, front page of the New York Post with the pictures of Joe Biden with the business, the Chinese business partners of Hunter Biden, that he says he never met with them. We know he golfed with them. Now he's meeting in China with them. But he says he has no idea why Hunter was on the plane. Just the flat-out lies that people are willing to accept for years. Now, your thoughts about the change at Facebook that's afoot. You believe it?
So here's what I think. I think that the pendulum of human freedom tends to swing towards the middle. I think that every force in American ethos is towards true capitalism and freedom of speech. So, I think that the captains of industry recognize this. They are returning to the notion, the proper notion that was misguided for the last several years, that the purpose of corporations is to make money for their shareholders and to create sources of employment across the country and to provide a service. The ethos of American corporation is not to create diversity, equality. It is not to tell people what they can and cannot hear or share with each other. these environments of social media were set up to be town halls, town squares, I should say, across the country for people to share ideas. Mark Zuckerberg has woken up to this. Is it good for his bottom line? Is he putting himself on the right side of the current leadership? Of course he is. But that is what corporations are designed to do. They should gravitate towards profitability, meritocracy, and providing service.
So interesting. A lot of people are writing me since he came on. How could you believe the new chief officer, his name is Joel Kaplan,
yep,
that was hired 2 weeks ago, that was from the Bush administration.
Right.
And he was fine. He was great. He hung out in our green room after. And he said, how do you believe him? Well, all I could tell you is we know by actions. He already defanged.
Absolutely.
And no longer will renew his fact-checking service, which was outside the company, that he spent $3 million on over the last few years and $400,000 alone last year, hired a private company. So Seth Dillon, Babylon Bee CEO, was on the bottom line, and I listened to him on with Barry Weiss's Free Press. This is how bad it got. And until I heard him talk about his funny website, which is like The Onion, it's a conservative bent. But listen to this, cut 19.
We've been fighting the battle for free speech for a long time. The fact-checking was something that literally almost killed the Babylon Bee. We were getting fact-checked so relentlessly. So many of our jokes were getting rated false, you know, silly jokes like CNN purchases industrial-sized washing machine to spin the news in before publishing it, or, you know, AOC goes on The Price is Right and guesses everything is free. These like silly jokes are getting rated false, and the media was characterizing us as traffickers in misinformation under the guise of satire. Those are the exact words from a New York Times report. So, you know, we were facing this situation where we were being threatened with demonetization and deplatforming because we were spreading fake news. But that's literally what satire is, right? Funny fake news.
So he says it almost killed him because he was pulled off all social media, including Twitter at the time.
Yeah. They would have banned Shakespeare and other famous satirists. Right. I think this shows a lack of education in many ways and understanding of the difference between humor and information sharing, a lack of sophistication in terms of, you know, the way that these things are being listened to, for sure. But I think we need to be careful not to, that aside, I mean, I think, you know, I made my point on that. We need to be careful not to allow things to correct. So don't over-punish. You know, if Meta seems to be heading in the right direction, this is a good thing. And it's the political forces and the voice of the American people that have urged this to happen, right? He wants to save his business and he wants it to prosper. He understands where the market is. He knows where the American people are. He knows they don't want their voices to be muzzled on social media. So we should embrace, as I think President Trump is, you know, he's like, look, it looks like they're headed in the right direction. And I think that that's the posture to approach this with.
I do. I agree. But you realize how bad it actually was. I mean, banned the former president, then they banned all these other people. And then
absolutely,
what was exposed in the Twitter files. What I asked Joel is, I've said this on this show, if you really want to show sincerity, I want to see the Facebook files. I want Barry Weiss, Michael Schellenberg, Barry and Matt Taibbi to be able to go in there and find out what exactly the FBI was up to, what their officers were doing, what Adam Schiff was doing.
And they should want that as well.
And then what they said, we want to move forward. So I don't know if you really want to show me that you've, you know, you're really going to correct your ways. You can't get your $400 million worth of Zuckerbucks from 2020, but you can show me how bad it got. Because my sense is that they lost control of their site out of threat from the FBI and from Democratic politicians.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, they can do that publicly or they can do it behind closed doors. And they need to make sure that the culture that they're creating is corrected. And that anyone who feels that they're being encouraged to stifle voices should be able to come forward. They should be encouraged to have integrity as a company and to make sure that that there isn't an agenda in that company.
So you remember that I don't know, what was that officer, the truth officer that came out and was discovered, and then she quickly got fired and she got litigious about Facebook. She got really upset by all this. And here's what she said. I guess because not only did Mark Zuckerberg send his chief operating officer on our show, but the day before he cut a tape. And one of the things that she says is this, Nina Jankowicz.
Oh, yeah.
She said, the fact checkers
have the Mary Poppins song, right?
Yes. The fact checkers have not been politically biased at Zucks, as Zuck suggests, but have been perceived as such because of politically motivated efforts to smear them, one that Zuck is now participating in and capitulating to. Facebook has already contributed to the demise of journalism, and this will be the final nail in the coffin. Well, number one, how could they be, number one, cooperating one day, not cooperating the next and contributing to the demise of journalism? Does she really not think that Facebook's been biased?
You know what? I think there are some people who are exhibiting kind of like death throw machinations on the way down. Like, you know, like I think of the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz. It's like I'm melting and they're still screaming out about these things. I think that many of them need to sort of open their eyes and understand where things were. When you have the former president, you know, kicked off the site, when you have people not able to express a different views of opinions on vaccination and on COVID policies from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and others, when you're banning people from a site, you got to wake up and say, you know what, let me take a look at what I was doing and whether or not it makes sense. You got to be honest.
They're going to use this, the method that X uses now called community notes. So Brian Kilmeade posts something, Martha McCallum doesn't agree. You can put your context in.
Right.
And it'll be there. That's how they want to do the self-governing thing. The thing that there's a couple of things, and tell me how you feel about this. So we have this New Orleans killer that posts online a video, and then he travels to Egypt, and he stays in Egypt for a month, and he goes to Canada, and then he goes to Tampa. If you look at the neighborhoods in Egypt, and I'm sure it's going to show Canada too, these are terror-laden neighborhoods, maybe Muslim extremists. Do you want a social media company to call the authorities, and should the authorities contact that social media company to say, I need to get in there? Because if you say yes, the fear is they're also going to say, I'm going to use that as an excuse to stop this person who seems to tends to be a little bit too popular politically or might be an adversary to a Democrat or a Republican. So one way they say to the FBI, you should have picked this up. And another way you say, how dare the FBI be looking at social media? Where's the line there?
Well, I think you're right to point that out. And I think that is where the lines get fuzzy. However, I think when there's police action and, you know, it goes back to the ability to search, right? So if you have a warrant, if you have evidence that shows that somebody who's posting something merits a search, just like it would be if you saw stuff coming out of their house, that should be the bar that has to be met for there to be an investigation. And if there is a police investigation or an FBI investigation, then the entity that's posting, whether it be Facebook or Meta or others, has to be cooperative with that search, just like you would in any other situation. Now, the lines and the laws have not been defined in this area, and we've let it get way too far without figuring out logical American, you know, things that line up with our values that work in that environment.
Yeah, I like to see it because sometimes you got to surf to find out what you're looking for. And do you want to, I guess the Facebook would have to hire monitors and just say, you know, I'm seeing this guy post Al-Qaeda, ISIS. I'm seeing this pop up. What's going on in Beaumont, Texas?
So if you're walking down the street with a backpack and there's like a detonator wire hanging out of it, right? That's a reason to stop someone on the street. And in this case, it's to me, it's a similar, it's a parallel environment. If there's essentially the proverbial detonator wire hanging out of the backpack in what someone is posting online that causes a danger to others, then that's where you have to get your search warrant and you have to say, please investigate this person. Here are the videos that we have.
A few more minutes with Martha as she tells us what's going to be on her show, and we come back on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, Martha McCallum's here. Her show starts at 3 o'clock. Martha, just going over your rundown now. And no doubt about it, the sun is up out in California.
Yeah,
and we're seeing the major damage in Malibu, Pacific Palisades, Eaton area, as well as now Pasadena.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Any special guests?
We have a number of guests on, people affected. We have the reporters who are on the scene that are showing what it looks like now that that it is the light of day and the fires have gone through these areas. Steve Guttenberg, you know, obviously the famous actor, was impacted. We're going to talk to him. Leslie Marshall, who our viewers know really well from being on Fox all the time, her house was threatened. She said she wasn't sure if it will be there when she gets back. So we'll be doing a lot of live coverage of this. We're also going to talk to James Freeman about the president's press conference yesterday and all the issues from Greenland to the wind farms that are driving whales crazy, which got pushback. But this is actually very true. It's a subject that I've followed really closely. And he's absolutely right about what's happening with the windmills in the ocean. So we're going to talk about all that.
All right. Talk about bipartisanship. You think of Fetterman and Manchin.
Yeah.
How about Tom Suozzi of New York, of Long Island? Here's what he said about working with Trump.
Listen, I'm going to fight President Trump when I disagree with him. When he was the president the first time, I didn't agree with him trying to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. I didn't agree with deporting the Dreamers. And I'll fight back on that stuff. But I supported him when he wanted to move the embassy, American embassy, to Jerusalem. I supported him on the Abraham Accords. I worked with him on the First Step Act, which was like a criminal reform thing. I voted for the big vote yesterday. So, I mean, when I can do it, I'm going to do it, especially if that's what my people want.
And his editorial said, I think we should stop being the party of no. And we have to come up with a different strategy because the American people reelected him. That's what we've been saying. You don't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be your pick, but you have to understand who America picked and where you're from. Trump won that district by like 11 points and he won by 10. Fetterman said, I lost my state to the president, so I'm going to work with him.
Honestly, Democrats like John Fetterman and Tom Suozzi are going to be the very interesting people to watch because you are, I think, going to see some crossover votes, even in the Senate potentially when we get to the hearings. For the cabinet members, I think you might see a little bit of crossover that could make a difference with some of these nominees. And these people sound like politicians used to sound. I mean, watch old videos of congressional hearings and congressional procedures. You'll hear Democrats and Republicans that sound very similar in many cases. And I think that there's a lot of data from the Washington Post that shows that this election actually shows that the country is less polarized than people think, that it has grown together in the middle quite a bit across different ethnic groups and gender groups. So I think they're onto something, these individuals, and I hope it leads to a productive term.
Yeah, and you're going to have a productive show. I think it will be productive, too, because if you're in these districts, you're not going to get reelected if you just fight against Trump because he's not hated in the purple areas. And by the way, men and women a lot closer on the vote than
Absolutely.
Everyone thought. By the way, quick note, Florida Theater, February 15th, coming up quicker than you think, right after the Super Bowl. I'll be in Jacksonville on stage, BrianKilmeade.com. I'll see you there. 10% off for any McCallum that shows up.
Really?
Fantastic.
Thank you, Brian.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Victims or Villains?
Lyle and Eric Menendez were motivated by greed.
Others have called the brothers arrogant and spoiled.
The reason behind this was financial gain.
Or so it seemed.
These two brothers should be out of prison by now.
I don't see how the years of sexual, physical, and mental abuse amount to life without parole.
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.